Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and earned a bachelor's degree in English / teaching from the University of Detroit, and a Juris degree from the University of Detroit Law School. He served as the prosecutor of Oakland County for 19 years, and since 1992, he's been the county executive of Oakland County. His name? The legendary, Lewis Brooks Patterson, L. Brooks, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Brasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Brasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Lewis Brooks Patterson, county executive, legendary Oakland County. L. Brooks, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's nice to be here.
I don't know if it's risky to hand you a microphone, but we'll try.
I'll behave.
Okay. Let's start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad.
Okay. I was born and raised in the north side, northwest side area called Rosedale Park, North Rosedale, and went to Cook grade school. And then Redford would have been my high school, but my twin brother and I decided to go on down to U of D High. And we went through U of D High, then over to U of D College, University College. Then I taught school a year at Catholic Central. And then after that year, I went in the Army for two and came back and decided I'd like to go to law school. So that's three more years at U of D, and graduated in 67. The rest of that was pretty much a public career. I became an assistant prosecutor, then prosecutor, and then the rest is history.
What's the biggest thing, Brooks, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, Mom was the optimist and Dad was the disciplinarian, so you can break it down from there. She was always the encouragement. You can do better. I know you got the talent, you got this. You can. She was surprised I wasn't bringing home all A's. And then Dad was... Mama said, okay, I want to tell your father what you did, and he'd settle, you know. So I was more afraid of him than I was the police officer, you know. So he kept the discipline. We had, you know, two boys growing up at the same time and my older sister. And we really had an idyllic childhood in Detroit, in Cook School, Ozzie and Harriet all the way.
How was it you chose a career in the field of law?
Almost by accident. I was single back in those days, and I decided that I went downtown, took out of the Army, went downtown, found a guy that he was still single, and he was at U of D Law School. So I found him, and we went to lunch. The next day, I had still nothing to do. So I went back downtown and found John Gruber, and we went to lunch that day. And the third day, we went to lunch. And then after that, I decided to go back to see the Dean Michael Charbonneau, who was just a fantastic guy. And I remember walking into his office, Jack, and you'll love this. I sat down. He didn't know me. I didn't make an appointment. The lady, his gatekeeper, asked me what my name was, and I told her Brooks Patterson. So she announced me, and I went in and sat down. And I said, you know, Dean, I've been watching, because I was joining John in the back of his class, and then we go out. I said, I've been watching what goes on here the last few days. As a spectator in the back row, you think I could go to law school? And he said, well, I don't know, Mr. Patterson, how'd you do on the LSAT? And I said, well, what's that? Well, he knew right away I'd never taken it. And he said, well, do you have a copy of your undergraduate transcript grades with me? I said, no, thank God, because I was anything but a star. And so I said, let me ask you a very important question, Mr. Patterson. Do you even have an application on file here at U of D? I said, no, I just got out of the Army. And he rolled back in his chair. He thought a minute. He said, okay, I'm going to give you a shot. I'll make sure that they clear you. You're going to go to classes for the first number of weeks you're here. You take the midterms exams, and bring me your grades. So I did, and he looked me up and said, you're third in the class. He said, I got a spot for you. So I literally walked in and sat down, and that's how I entered law school. And well, once you go through all the classes for 3 years, and you take the bar exam and you pass it, I said, I've come this far. Why would I not want to try to use degree? So I joined a law firm. And that law firm, within 6 months, got me into the prosecutor's office so I'd get some quick trial experience. And I loved it, and I stayed 3 years. So that's how I got into the practice of law, eventually into politics.
1972, how was it you became prosecutor of Oakland County?
Well, the prosecutor at that time is a friend of mine now. His name was Tom Plunkett. And Tom kept me on board until about 71, and I had never lost a case for him. And I had moved up quickly through the ranks and became the senior trial lawyer in Oakland County. And he called me in one day, and I'll never forget it, on a Friday, thinking he was going to give me a raise because I just won every case I tried, including 3 murders that month. And he said, I want you to resign. And I was stunned, and I said, well, why? He said, you broke office policy. And I said, well, what did I do? And he said, you criticized a judge. I said, well, show me that policy. And he got real mad. And he said, if you don't resign, I'm going to fire you. I said, well, fire me. He said, I'm not leaving. So he fired me. So that's how I got into politics. I remember walking out the door and turning to him and said, I'm going to run against you next year, Tom. And he said, okay, bring it on. Well, I brought it on and I won. So that's what you call poetic justice, Jack. The guy who fires you, you run against him next year.
And you've been breaking policy ever since.
Every day.
Let's talk about your 19 years as prosecutor.
Some of the best days of my life. I think I remember Judge Zim, who was a previous prosecutor, a few years before I'd gotten there. He used to tell me, we'd sit in his chambers and talk, see, these could be the best years of your life. I've been a judge, blah, blah, blah. He said, but I look back in those days, I was a prosecutor of the county as the best days of my life. Well, I think he's right. There's certainly a lot of satisfaction in being the prosecutor. You wear the white hat, you put the bad guy in jail. You protect the schoolgirls and the cops and everybody else who falls, within your jurisdiction there. And I loved every day of it. I had a case go all the way to the United States Supreme Court. I argued that in 1974, which is a real privilege for a lawyer to stand there before the court, the United States Supreme Court, and argue a case. So I did a lot of things I would not be able to do otherwise but for that job. And then I left in, I'd be 88, and getting ready to make my run in 92. And in 92, the top job opened up, and I came back as county exec in that 92 election and took office in 93. And I got to add, what I do now is really, not thrilling in the sense that when the jury returns, but satisfaction in being able to see something that's broken and fix it, or in many cases, seeing something that doesn't exist and creating something as a response. And so I do that frequently over the years, and so the job has its challenges and its rewards.
And our community is better for it. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with L. Brooks Patterson, who from 1972 through 1988 was the prosecutor of Oakland County, and in those 19 years, never lost a case.
Not for the prosecution. There's a reason for that, and most lawyers who are listening to this would agree. A prosecutor has ways of, he'll dismiss the bad cases he sees. He'll plea bargain the ones that are weak, and he'd just soon not take it to court because it's not a real compelling case. But the real good cases, you got the eyewitnesses, you got the fingerprints, you got the ballistics, you got the DNA. Well, you take those to trial. And if you can't give them the plea straight up as charged, well, then you have to try them.
Brooks, what did those 19 years teach you about people?
Boy. Even though you're seeing the seamy side of life, it seemed, the murders, the rapes, the prostitutions, the drugs. But on the other hand, on the other side of that, there are dedicated police officers, dedicated judiciary, the victims of those crimes who are forever grateful that you came in and helped her or him, save the day. I had a case where a young lady was murdered. She was in a drive-in in Pontiac. And unfortunately, she and her husband decided to stay through and let the show come back on the second time, which therefore put it, you know, into the late hours, 11 o'clock or so, because they wanted to see the beginning of the show they had missed. Well, I left them as the only car there, and some guys came through the fence, and make a long story short, they shot through the glass window, partially blinded the husband, and a shot hit her in the head and killed her. And so I tried the case, and they weren't going to plead the murder in the first degree, and I wasn't going to give them anything else. But then the father of the girl, after that, came to every event and fundraiser I had. And I told him, I said, Dave, you don't have to do this. I know you're grateful. I know you appreciate it. But you've come to 2 years of events. And I wouldn't even call him. Somehow he found out about where the parties were. He always came and bought a ticket. And it just told me, you know, some people do understand what I do in those days was important, certainly important to that family. And so he made sure that I understood that as long as he lived.
You're legendary for a lot of things, El Brooks. One of the biggest is your wit. Where did you get the wit from?
That's the same wit that gets me in trouble, Jack. When I was a young prosecutor...
We've already had to cut out four segments from you,
Brooks. Yeah, I understand. When I was a young prosecutor, you're trying a murder case of a cop, or you're trying a rape of a 3 or 4 year old girl, or indecent liberties, we call it back in those days. You can't go on camera and smiling. There's nothing funny about a child being raped or a cop being murdered. So you always had this very stern look. And people kept coming up to me and saying, boy, you are really one angry young man. I said, I'm really not. I mean, I've got a good sense of humor, but that's not the time to display it. So I thought, well, okay, I've got to change the image somewhat so they know it's just, you know, not Ivan the Terrible in the prosecutor's office. So when I do dinners and speeches, I always come up with a couple before I start or during the speech, just to lighten up the crowd and send a message. And a lot of them, early on in my career, as I started throwing in humor, but oh my God, I didn't know he had a sense of humor. And that was the whole point. Show them there is a balance, though. When I have to be serious, I can be. When I want to have some fun, I can do that as well.
1992, you become the county executive of Oakland County. 23 years ago. Paint a picture for us of Oakland County 23 years ago.
Okay, it was pretty much a Republican stronghold, which, of course, that's not necessarily true today. As Detroit empties out, they bring their politics with them. I still don't understand that phenomenon. I mean, you're leaving a city which was corrupt, high taxes, non-existent services, a school system nationally discredited, and you're coming out to Oakland County, and you're going to try to vote the very people in that you left behind in Detroit. And I can say, wait, we got good officials out here. Give yourself a break and test them. So they throw all the incumbents out and install, you know, the untested. It just doesn't make sense to me. So Oakland is turning now more of a balanced county. It's not a cakewalk after the Republican primary, far from it. And so that's changed. That landscape has changed. It's still, and I do very well in the Democratic areas because I really don't play politics with my office and in the official performance of those duties. I'm still a very active politician, but when it comes to my office, we're in blinders. If something has to be done, I don't care if it's in the Democrat neighborhood, Republican neighborhood, we get it done. I think the Democrats understand that, and they appreciate the fact that we just don't use the office for one party's political game. So,
speaking of the office, you've built a very strong team of business people from the private sector.
Correct.
Many other politicians don't do that. How did you do that, and why did you do that?
Well, again, let me get a little political here behind this mic. If you look at they've done many stories about Obama's cabinet and where they came from. Some came from academia. Some came from social activist organizations. Nobody comes from the business world. And you talk business around that cabinet table, I'm sure it's probably considered some kind of heresy. I considered government to be a big business. My big business is $825 million a year. And I want to make sure that I run it with the business principles in mind, that you hire the best people you can, you train them, and then you get out of their way and let them do what they do best. And I'm not about to tell Bob Dattle, my financial guru on my staff, how to prepare the budget or the certified annual financial report. That's what he does for a living. He came from Ernst & Young. And so he's a CPA with public accounting experience. So he's good. That's my first hire. And I like to think down the line I brought in people like that. Jerry Poisson, who's my number one deputy, chief deputy, is really probably the sharpest guy on my staff. We call him a brainiac, and he's in charge of, you know, basically the deputies themselves. We have good people in IT. Phil Berlini is bringing home, you know, award after award recognition of our ID department. We're now ranked by Governing Magazine as the most digitally advanced county in America. Took time to put that all together. And now we've got a team, and I think the proof is in the pudding. Our county is very well managed. We have surpluses in all of our funds. We paid off our what's so-called dreaded legacy costs. We don't have any costs. People who have retired, they're guaranteed that their health insurance will be there for them throughout their retirement. And we're the only county in America to have done that. So we're in very good shape. But Brooks Patterson gets to spread the gospel. But behind me is a very talented team that I always recognize. And I say, but for them, we wouldn't be where we are. It's just a team effort.
Hillary always had one or two emails. How many emails do you have, Brooks?
I maybe get 50, 60 a day. But only three can get through the filter.
Of all the achievements by you and your 3,800 teammates these past 23 years, what are you the proudest of?
Oh, my God, Jack. I suppose I spend most of my time in economic development, trying to continue to build. You know, back in 2009, we got clobbered in Oakland County. That's the worst year for the implosion of the domestic automotive industry. Chrysler, that was headquartered in my county, went bankrupt. Was a huge employer. Now it's not my largest employer. General Motors, who was our largest employer, is now down the line. Beaumont Health Systems is now number one. So we lose 60,000 jobs in 1 year, and you have 9,000 foreclosures in that year. Unheard of, the third wealthiest county in America. So we had to scramble, create programs to bring the workforce back, and we created a program called the Emerging Sectors. 10 sectors of high-tech, sustainable, good-paying jobs outside of automotive. I mean, we still got a lot of automotive, but I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket again. I want to diversify the economic base, and we're doing that very quickly. Since 2004, when we kicked off this program, we've bought in about 360 companies outside the automotive range. Healthcare is the fastest growing. We have 2,000 IT companies. Finance is really a very strong play for us. And these 10 sectors, we just had a party last week at Edsel Ford's Pentastar Hangar at the Oakland County International Airport, and we invited about 800 people came, all businessmen and businesswomen, and no taxpayers' funds. This was all underwritten by our corporate friends, and we had a party. And they came in, and we gave them some Brooks Bucks, and around the perimeter of the building were 10 or 11 food trucks, so you could buy whatever you wanted to buy with these Brooks Bucks. And then, of course, the vendors redeemed them at the end of the party. It was a lot less expensive going that way than it would be if you would charge $45 a head for everybody. It would have been a big bill. So, and we had a party. People kept saying, well, what's the party for? You didn't charge me to get in. You're giving me booze and food. Well, what's your rationale? Well, this is a thank you party. I said, what do you mean, thank you? And I said, well, thank you for investing in Oakland County, creating jobs. And to a man and to a woman, they said, you know, we've never been thanked before. I said, well, consider that accomplished. Mission accomplished. So working on the economy like we have and bringing it back as strongly as we have. At one point in time, we led the state in unemployment over 13%. And the economists from U of M, Fulton and Grimes, who advised me throughout the year, said, Brooks, you got to get your unemployment down to 5% or below. 5% from our perspective as economists is full employment. It's considered full employment because you always have some people going and coming from the workforce. So 5% is where you want to be. Our last report a couple months ago, we were at 4.1. So we've come back extremely strong. I'm very proud of that.
We're talking to Al Brooks Patterson. When we come back, we'll continue talking about economic development. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with the legendary Lewis Brooks Patterson, L. Brooks. L. Brooks, 1998.
The L used to be very private, but you've put it out there three times tonight, so you're ruining my anonymity.
You've told me to do that, Alfred.
Oh, I did that.
1998, you start something called Automation Alley.
Yeah, it was in response to my mouth at these lunches and speaking, and businessmen would say, you know, Brooks, we're having a tough time filling our top-paying jobs. Our IT jobs are vacant. Some of our top engineering positions are vacant. We can't find talent. So I came back and developed with my team a program to begin to brand this region as high-tech, because we truly are. And then we got the businesses and jobs to show it. So we brought together 43 companies who are all, you know, quality blue-chip organizations, and they all chipped in $15,000, and they gave me the seed money to start Automation Alley as a branding organization, branding effort to let the rest of the world know, certainly the rest of the country know, this is a high-tech region. And now that's up to over 1,000 companies, and we're in 8 counties, and it does now, Automation Alley does now enjoy a national reputation as one of the top, what do you want to call it, organizations for advancing high-tech engineering.
Let's go now to quality of life programs. Rochester Fire and Ice.
Yeah, that one was an effort by me when it came to, well, who does anything in February? You stay in the house, you maybe start a fire if you're lucky, and that's the most excitement you have because that's such a cold, bitter month. So we decided to just face the winter, you know, head on, and we set up an outdoor event for 2.5 days. And out in Rochester, we have fire and ice. We freeze Second Avenue, and that becomes a toboggan run. It goes right down the hill into the property. We have 3 teams of dogs who come in with dog sleds. The kids never ridden a sled before, but now they get a chance to do that. We have we build a skating pond for skating. We have just all kinds of winter games for the kids and the adults. We have a tent, obviously, that's heated. It just gives the people something to do in a bad month. And then at night, each night, Friday night and Saturday night, we have fireworks. I'll tell you what, maybe not quite as big as down at the River Festival, but they're darn good, and you can see them for miles around. I don't think many of us have seen these big exploding rockets go off when the snow's out there, and the snow filters through the snow, and it really is very attractive. So we try to have a fun event for families, and we're getting a lot of good reviews on that.
Quake on the Lake.
Quake on the Lake is something that we picked up. It was about to fail, and put our organizational strength behind it. It's out on Pontiac Lake, and it's the hydroplane racing. The big ones are down on the river, but these are the next set of boats below that, these hydroplanes. They go a couple hundred miles an hour, so this is not any kiddie thing. Speed records have been set every year we've had Quake on the Lake because we've got that mile-long front, and Pontiac Lake is not as choppy, obviously, as the Detroit River, so they can get up a real head of steam. And every year, we do not fail to set 1 or 2 world records for hydroplane offshore racing. And if you're a boat enthusiast and a race enthusiast, come on out, and you sit along the beach there, back at a safe distance, obviously, and enjoy that. And we'll draw between 30,000 and 40,000 people.
We're talking to the Dynamo of Oakland County, L. Brooks Patterson. Next one, Elite 40 Under 40.
Yeah, again, all of us in this area are very much aware of the fact that some of our best and brightest escape to Chicago, California, Denver, go to New York, Boston, and they're going out there because that's where they see their exciting careers. And we can't keep bringing these kids up, educating them, and then losing them to the coast. So we decided to have a program called the Elite 40 Under 40, where we pick up 40. This is all done by nominations, and it's done by voting. We pick 40 out of 40 of the ultimate nominees, and we bring them in, and we work with them all year long. I put them on different programs I've got so they can get real-life experience hands-on, like the Business Roundtable. And, my God, some of these young kids, after they're under 40, obviously. But Jack, you and I, I'm going to start a program for us called 80 Under 80, so don't despair. And these kids are extremely bright, and they're published. And one young lady has her book in 17 countries, it's an educational manual. And so they're really good at what they do, and so we're giving them some exposure and letting the rest of the network. Now we're into our fourth class, so 4-4 is, you know, 160 kids who now network among themselves and they meet each other. It's just really scoring high points with the people who participate.
You've said, and I quote, "This will be my side door into heaven." Another high point, talk to us about the Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, that one's around since 1980. My close friend, best friend at the time, was killed in a private plane crash. He has two kids on board. They were killed with him. It was such a tragedy. I remember getting the call that night, and it was in May. So August that year, I had a fundraiser for the family, for Ron and two kids, Tim and Jennifer. And we raised, it was a gold fighting, small gold fighting. We raised, I think, $3,000. And we gave it to the school, Clarkson School, in memory of the kids. One was in high school, one was still in grade school. We did it the second year, still, $3,500 maybe. After about the fourth year, it was always well-attended. It was a sellout. But a couple of people said to me, "Brooks, I live in Birmingham, I live in Rochester, I live in Troy. Why are we giving money to the Clarkson Schools?" And I said, "Yeah, that's a fair criticism." So we went back and rethought what we could do with the net proceeds, and we formed a 501c called the Rainbow Connection, and we grant wishes for terminally ill children or children who are facing tragic disease in their life, in the family's life. And we've been now around since 80, so 35 years. We've picked up now to the point where our budget is about, 1.7 million dollars. We have 9 or 10 full-time employees. A gentleman died, left me $1 million. I put 500 into an endowment, and with the other 500, I bought a permanent home, an office on University going into Rochester, just 4 blocks west of Main Street, and the Rainbow Connection has them. The problem was we were living in basements, and people donate space, and we just couldn't build up our volunteer force. Well, now we have a permanent home. It's been rebuilt, and we have close to a couple thousand volunteers who help us in the various events. It's all done by fundraising, and we just got recognized by the Charity Navigator, which is a national ranking institute, and they look at all your costs and how much money actually goes from donations to into the directed design of who should get the money for the charity. We got 4 stars, the highest rating. So about 91 cents of every dollar raised does fulfill a wish.
Truthfully, Brooks, there's not much difference between the donkeys and the elephants. The number one priority for both of them is I stay in office. And what I see so much is that they all do whatever is politically correct. You are different. You do the right thing.
I like to think so. And I tell you, I'm taking that inspiration from a good Democrat. Bobby Kennedy wrote one time, if you do the right thing in the long term, the politics will take care of itself. And I thought, and I adopted that motto, that mantra, over 27 years ago. And when faced with a difficult call, I'd simply say, I'm going to do what is right. And the politics will take care of itself. And that has never failed me.
We're talking to Al Brooks Patterson. When we come back, we'll ask him about his late son, Brooksy. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGI. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the county executive of Oakland County since 1992, L. Brooks Patterson. Brooks, February 11th, 2007. What happened?
Well, that was actually the party happened on the 10th, and he died after midnight, so he died on the 11th. But that night, there was a party up in just north of, I think it was in Lapeer, and had a friend's house. And I was not there, but some of my family was in attendance, and all my kids were there. And I just didn't feel like going to another kid party, you know. So Brooksy went out with the owner of the home to get some firewood for the fire in the fireplace there. And somehow they got on a snowmobile and decided, this is the wintertime, February, and they decided to leave shore and go out on the ice. I don't know why. But as soon as he pulled away from shore, three young men came racing down the lake. And he didn't have a chance. He was T-boned by one of those snowmobiles. Taken to the hospital. I get a call. I go up to Genesis, and they wouldn't let us in, of course. And Then I hear the awful phrase, code blue, code blue. I know enough to be dangerous. I turned to a friend of mine who was a doctor. I said, is that for me? Is that for Brooksy? He said, no, there's other people in the ER. Well, it wasn't. It was code blue from my son. And he expired that morning. You know, Jack, I think anybody who's lost a kid knows what I'm going through. I know what they've gone through. It's not a very enviable club to be in. But once you're in it, you understand so much about the other people's grief and sorrow as they did mine. We had over 2,000 people come to the funeral home. And it must have happened to me 10 times. Mostly it was men. They come through the line, they shake hands, and they say, you know, Brooks, you'll never get over this moment, but you will learn to live with it. And at the time, I didn't think so. Next slide, you know, a couple more down the line, you won't get over it, but you will learn to live with it. I guess they're right. I'll never get over it, but now I can talk about it without crying. I don't want to get over it. I want to remember my son till the day I die. I got a lot of pictures in my office and at home. Not in a maudlin way. It was in a very, you know, always with the family in a very happy setting. On February 7th of that year was my state of the county address. And in it, I said, I'm going to start a race down here in Oakland County, modeled after the Bobby Krim races in Flint. And I want to do a half marathon. So my son, Brooksy, comes up. He said, Dad, can I run on that? And I said, I hope so. I'm counting on you. So he was going to run in it. And then 3 days later, of course, he was killed. So the team I'd put together, who were all friends of mine who run marathons, including Boston, I wasn't at the meeting, but they decided, look, let's name the race after Brooks Jr., called the Brooksy Way. And that was from extrapolation from the eulogy that my son-in-law gave. He said, he was talking to the kids in the church, look, if you want to live life, you know, go for the white caps when you're water skiing, do it the Brooksy Way. If you want to climb, take the sheer side of the mountain, do it the Brooksy Way. And that became the, you know, the refrain. So the Brooksy Way took on meaning for these young kids. And I'll go out to his grave plot right now, and there'll be, oh, a bag of candy, he has sweet tooth, and a empty beer sitting on the tombstone. So his friends still go by and spend some time with him. So the Brooksy Way is the race, and we're now up to 6,000 runners. And what we do in Brooksy's name is we set up a mini granting system. And if you're a member of an organization that promotes the health of your community or your club or your school or your church, oh yeah, you can apply up to $2,000, and we'll help fund these programs. We're giving out about $140,000-$150,000 in grants to clubs that are trying to promote health. So over, and I think, Jack, I really do believe this, maybe not to now, maybe not today, not tomorrow, but some years down the road, we will help improve the overall well-being and health of our community because we funded so many programs in Brooks' name.
Terrific. 38 months ago, August 10th, 2012, your life changed again.
Oh, yeah. This was, I'll never get over it, that's when I was going through a traffic device. I'm the passenger, my driver. We had the green light, no question. That's what the videos of the building showed. And this guy went through, and he saw a yellow arrow, which he thought gave him the right of way to turn. He smacked us. He's going 50. We're going 50, so it's about a 100-mile impact. My driver, as a result of the accident, is a quadriplegic to this day and will be for the rest of his life. I'm still in a wheelchair 38 months afterwards. I'm getting stronger, but I still got a way to go. That driver walked away, as they always do. And it was, you know, I was just telling you off the air, a friend of mine lost his son a couple of days ago. Same identical thing. The son, he had the green arrow, and he was turning on. Another guy just busted right through the light and killed him. It just defies explanation. It really does.
You were unconscious for 18 days. The doctors told your family that you have less than a 3% chance of surviving, and you're doing very well.
Yeah, I am. Those odds, if you had told me, if the doctor had whispered in my ear, hey, Brooks, you got a 3% chance of making it, I would have curled up in the fetal position and checked out. But, you know, I kept making progress every day. I had every bone in my body was broken. I got both arms, both legs, left femur, right ankle, left knee, right knee. And the left knee and the left hip. It goes on and on. I've come back from most of it. The one that's holding me back is my left hip is still pretty bad. Plus, I can't regain my balance. So if I get out of this chair, which I can stand right now and show you, I can stand here. But if I take steps, then I don't have the balance. And we're trying to figure out how we can restore that. So, but if you sit in a chair for 38 months, naturally you're going to have some deterioration of your balance.
Do you have another run in you, Brooks?
I thought you mean run like the heck Brooksy Way. Hell no on that one. But yes, I have another run as far as elective office. I'm going to run again in 2016 for my probably my last term. I love what I do, and people say, well, when are you going to retire? And I say, when I wake up on Monday morning and I don't look forward to going to work, then I know it's time.
Who's the best politician in our lifetime and why?
Oh, I suppose you ask different people, you get different answers. I don't know if there's any unanimity on who's the best. I personally thought Reagan was inspiring. I said it back then, I said it now. I think he... I try to model myself after the way he administers. He picks the best team he could, and then he, you know, gets out of the way and lets them do. And then you also have the other type of people who pick good people, then they become micromanager, and they strangle their appointments. So I do what Reagan did. Put the best people in office, you know, let them know you're backing them, and then get out of the way and let them, you know, let them do some miracles.
If a young listener tonight's thinking of having a career in governmental service, what would you say to them?
I would encourage it. It's not corny, but I think political service is a noble calling. I really do. I remember when I told Mom, my mother was living at the time, that I was going to run for prosecutor, she tried to talk me out of it because she said, Brooks, politics is dirty. And I said, it's only dirty if you make it dirty, if you let it be dirty. Mom, I don't intend to. And I've tried to live, obviously, up to that commitment. I can't think of any Brooks Patterson or prosecuting attorney or county executive scandals that we've had to, you know, live through. We've done, I think, what the public expects us to do, work hard and keep our hands out of the jar.
As our time winds down, you've always been a huge proponent of small business, which is under siege right now with regulations, et cetera. Talk to us for a minute about small business.
Well, that's the backbone of our economy. Everybody thinks it's Chrysler and it's General Motors, of course. You've got to have those big companies, those big investments. But day in and day out, it's the small entrepreneur with 3 and 4 employees who may add 5 and 6 over time, of course. They populate the whole area here in Oakland County, and that is the strength of our economy. And we have over 44,000 businesses. They're not all the size of GM and Ford. Many of these are small businesses, and by definition, it's under 50. I could even take it down to under 25 employees. And they're under siege. You're right, they are under siege. Wait till the Obama bill hits them next year, and they're going to be shutting down, and you're going to hit with the Obama insurance cost, then you're going to get prevailing wage, and you're going to get minimum wage up to $15. Government is about to kill the golden goose.
Brooks, to you and your 3,800 people, thank you for the job you do every day. You do a phenomenal job. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack. I intend to.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Small.